Good afternoon. When the All-American Congress of the Great United States sat a while ago in legislative session...
What'd they do?
They decided they must make a good impression.
We know. So they started legislation, more increases in taxation, which we feel is economic indiscretion.
Correct. From Atlantic to Pacific, taxes now are so terrific that Republicans predict a new depression.
Who cares? As for us, we'll be like brainy businessmen. And we're never, ever going to work again. It's certainly silly to struggle and slave for what you can save today. Cause whenever you're clever enough to make, the government takes away. Away, away to make the people pay is to raise the income tax. And who can fish the sun? The political leaders who sit on their backs. A fella is foolish to fuss at the fret for what he can net today. Cause whenever you're clever enough to make, the government takes away. With a tax on this and a tax on that, we're starting to talk in our sleep. It's strange to say, but today, the more you earn, the less you keep. We'd like to know what goods are doing when all that has got us is greed. Your legal advisor will tell you it's wiser and cheaper to be unbelief. From income tax and inheritance tax, we're getting the government blue. The taxes take the profits you make, and they leave you once you lose. Our uncle died, and at first we cried, but now we can really relax. Cause here's the joke, he passed our book, and we don't have to pay any tax. You like the stuff, you buy a block and pay the commission, of course. It's up, you sell it and pay the tax, and fine, you've taken a loss. We're losing our health from sharing the wealth, we think it's an awful mistake. It's funny, but all of the money we make, the treasurer takes, the senator takes, the congressman takes. And not forgetting municipal tax and luxury tax, they're breaking our backs. From giving the government 20% and 40%, we can't pay the rent. They tax us for every emergency here, emergency there. It's starting to get in our hair. It's certainly silly to struggle and slave for what you can save today. Cause whatever you're clever enough to make, the government takes away, away. Today our poor financial stomach is looping the government loop. We've got political indigestion from living in alphabet soup. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker take most of your dough today. And whatever is left, well, they get through. The government takes, the government takes, the government takes, the government takes, the government takes away.
Well, boys and girls, there we got our start off there. How about that? About income tax. And then old Webb Pierce singing a song, one of my favorite country singers. He's been dead quite a while now. He had a place out in Beverly Hills. He had a swimming pool shaped like a guitar. He died of pancreatic cancer, from what I understand. But he was really hot back in the 50s and some of the 60s, yeah. It's February the 9th, 2015, Moon's Day. I think I already said that, didn't I? Yeah. too much coffee. Oh, I guess I said that when I made my latest message for the phone machine, or the phone directed number. It's a 641-715-3800. I get little thoughts now and then and don't want to talk too long, so I put a little short message on there. I'm going to try to do it every day, but probably it won't be every day. But when you get that number, you have to put in a registration number, which is 56890#. And the number is 641-715-3800. And the number, the code number is 56890#. There you go. And leave a message on there. And if it's a good message, I'll try to put it on the show. And let's keep that phone number going. And you might jot it down on little pieces of paper and sprinkle it around, you know. Yeah. And we're getting pretty active now on Twitter, too. And, of course, I changed it from Tom Metzger over to White Aryan Resistance. Because there's still people in this country, believe it or not, who don't know who Tom Metzger is. Yeah, I was disappointed last night. I heard a few days ago that David Duke was going to be on Russia TV on Sunday night at 6:30. And I sit there all bated breath waiting, and all that come up was all these black people marching across that Pettus Bridge, named after an arch segregationist. They're trying to get rid of it. And somebody put up a great big billboard with Nathan Bedford Forrest on it, and it was pretty, and that didn't make him too happy either. But even though the head chimp went down there, yeah, he gave a big radical black speech. That's one thing about somebody that's half black, half white. He could go out and speak up a white racist message, or he can go down there and make a radical black racist message. He can play at either side of the fence, man. Anyhow, all that crap, Negrophilia came on there, and I didn't get to say David Duke. Damn, I wanted to see what he was up to. Skullduggery, I'm sure. Maybe has another Jew write him a ghost book, and I don't know. Who knows what evil lurks in the heart of David Duke? They picture him to be such a badass. Well, I'll tell you one thing, he is not. He's never been any kind of a badass. Well, I shouldn't pick on Plastic Man like that. He's, you know, I shouldn't do it because he's got so many faithful suckers out there sending him money and I don't want to disturb him. Morris Dees is in trouble, of course. I sent out that information. They're finally starting to circle around him, and they're going to get him. I told a couple of those people, those left-wing writers, I said, well, just go down there to, you know, get on the internet and call the guy in charge of trust funds in Alabama, the state capital, Montgomery, I guess, and do like I did. Ask him for records on the Southern Trust Fund, which is prominently printed on Dee's IRS returns, that's where all his money's at. But like I told you before, and I've told people many times, I contacted the head nigger down there in Montgomery, asked him about the Southern Trust Fund. They don't know anything about it. We don't know nothing about it. So anyhow, I think people dig around there, they're going to find some real interesting things. Well, I got a note in here from Stray Dog, none other than Stray Dog from back in on the Jersey Shore. How about that? He says, this guy might be a good bet to die soon, possibly Deadpool entry. I don't know who he's talking about. Well, maybe, but maybe I shouldn't look into it. I don't know. What the hell? Anyhow, we'll forget about that. Commenting on oil pipeline, TT, I heard a guy from Louisiana speaking on C-SPAN about oil pipeline. He explained that the oil will move without the pipeline. Oil moves by barge, tractor, trailer, rail, tanker, cars. Of course it does. And they're wrecking all over the country and spilling all their shit out. So it can be argued that a pipeline is actually safer than the other methods of transport, provided that they perform routine inspections and maintenance on the pipeline. Well, that's the crux of the matter there. Most of these pipelines, or this pipeline they wanted to build down there that Obama nixed, was a one-wall pipeline. See, and these pipelines, to be safe or relatively safe, you have to have a two-wall pipeline. Also, every so far, they have to have a signaling device that will signal back electronically that there's a problem in the pipeline, which we found on some of the pipelines that they don't even work, these units. And they found that when there's oil spills. So that's the problem with pipelines. And the other thing is, well, why do you need a pipeline? Why do we need the oil itself? Because that oil is going over to China. It's not going to stay here. So to risk screwing up our ecology, I would forget it. But like I said, these tanker cars, a lot of these tanker cars are older too. I know nobody knows what shape those tanks are in. And there's more and more wrecks around the country spilling these oil tanker contents into the environment. But like I say, on the I did studies on that oil pipeline years ago, and they said that those electronic devices that are in the pipeline to check on problems rarely work properly. And when they want to build a pipeline fast, they build a single-walled pipeline instead of a double-walled pipeline. So, and then, of course, the security is terrible on a pipeline. You got more security on a tanker car than a pipeline, because anybody can come up and do whatever they want along that entire length of the pipeline. It's a wonder up there in Alaska that pipeline hasn't been sabotaged more than it has. So anyhow, it's all a bad deal. It's all a bad deal. I think a third of the energy in Germany already is developed through sun and wind power. And we can do it. We can do it here, plus developing other forms of energy in this country. Just put all these guys to work that got the brains to do it. Put some money into it. Of course, it all boils down, though, to too much population. The more you allow the people to come in here from all over the world, they're coming in here like mad. Well, of course, they use energy. And so if you cut down the immigration a lot, you don't need as much energy. And the people who cry about the environment and energy and all that are the same people who are advocating bringing more people to open borders. I mean, they're nuts.
They are illogical, senor.
Let's check out this ISIL situation here and the history of ISIL. What is that all about? And what the hell are we doing? Listen to this. This is the last time the Arab world had a united Islamic state led by a religious leader, the Ottoman Empire, the Caliphate. The Allies knew the Ottoman Empire would shut down key shipping routes and cripple Britain's economy. They had to neutralize it. So Great Britain sent over an army officer from Britain. His name was T.E. Lawrence. Remember that? Lawrence of Arabia? There was a movie made about him, the great movie with Peter Sellers called Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence was tasked with convincing the Arabs to fight against the Ottoman Empire. After Lawrence promised the Arabs rule over a new United Arab Kingdom of Greater Syria, which encompassed present-day Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and parts of Iraq and Jordan, he succeeded. Quote, to get to the root of the current Middle East conflict, that is your starting point, unquote. It is the center of everything that is happening today. The problem here, Great Britain never intended to honor the promises they made. They had used the Arabs in order to protect their own interests. Remember, they needed to get the Ottoman Empire out of the way. Hold on here. The entire time Lawrence was negotiating with the Arabs, Great Britain, behind everybody's back, was negotiating with France and planning how they were going to actually divide up the Middle East after the war. They needed to make sure that there was no United Arab Kingdom that would ever get in the way. Under Sykes-Picot agreement, the British and French drew new boundaries, fractured the region so the British and their allies in the region could control it. Remember, the goal was to divide the Arabs, not to unite them. Divide them so they could protect the trade routes. They didn't care about the Arabs, who didn't care about the Jews, and they didn't care about anything. They wanted the trade routes. The Arabs were forced to accept this Western European model of a nation states because they had no choice. Arab resentment grows in the wake of that treaty, Sykes-Picot, where they have divided everything and made new lines. They wanted the Palestinians, the Arabs, what was promised to them, the rule of Greater Syria. Okay. In the decades after Sykes-Picot agreement, after the Ottoman Empire collapsed, the British created the British Mandate of Palestine. The area east of the Jordan River was called Transjordan, and the area west was the land for the Jewish people. Of course, that was under the Balfour Declaration, I guess, where Britain just decided to give this area to the Jews. How would the Arab world would be to unite now? They needed a new rallying cry. They would use the Balfour Declaration, Britain's promise of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And why in the hell they thought they were legally able to give that to them is beside the point. Just by power. They needed to start blaming the Jews, the pawns. Well, that's this writer's opinion. The motive becomes clear when you see how the Arab world reacted when the British mandate in Palestine was set to expire. The Palestinian Arabs were about to be presented with a chance to finally have what they said they always wanted and dreamed of. All they wanted was their own land. So now here comes the UN and they have this mandate. Remember, the British put together this partition, Transjordan and the Israeli state, so it was a two-state solution. It was split 56% Jewish, 43% Arab. 56 looks big, but much of the land is not sufficient for crops, so it's pretty close. Jerusalem, an international zone, the Jewish people accepted the plan, and if a Palestinian homeland was the goal of the Arab world, not the Palestinians, the Arab world. All they had to do was agree, but remember, the scapegoat goes away. Well, this is pro-Jewish. The real goal was uniting the Arab kingdom, one united Arab kingdom, a return of the Ottoman Empire, gaining control of Greater Syria. If you make peace with Israel, that all goes out the window. Well, you're not going to make peace with Israel. So when they presented with what they said they always wanted, a nation of their own, they said no, and then all hell broke loose. Well, the Arabs, the Jews had lived among the Arabs for thousands of years, I guess, or at least hundreds of years, relatively peaceful. So uniting the Arabs into one big caliphate, I don't think the Jews would have had that much trouble, not like they've got today. The Arab world promised that they would get the Palestinians a homeland, waging all-out war on Israel. By all reasonable estimates, Israel should have been utterly destroyed. Well, if the United States hadn't supplied them with $720 billion since 1948. Yeah, if the United States hadn't supplied them with intelligence information and everything else, they would have been destroyed several times. Five Arab armies with huge advantages in armor, artillery, and air force were against it. Despite suffering huge casualties early on, somehow this tiny new nation, this European outpost, the Jewish people managed to stave off the assault and then go on the offensive. This is pro-Jew. But anyhow, the point was the caliphate. Let's go back to the caliphate. And let's start here. I know I read about Sykes-Picot agreement years ago when we were at another place, and I put it on the chalkboard. But it didn't all fall into place until I learned about ISIS and ISIL, and the difference between ISIS and ISIL. Now it all makes sense to me, and now you'll be able to figure out what is really going on. Radical Islamists in the Islamic State, also known as the Islamic State of Iraq and Levant, are trying to regain the territory they were promised before the Sykes-Picot Agreement. If you understand that, the revolutions of the Arab Spring and the goals of the Islamic State become much clearer. Yeah, they want their land back. How do we get there? Pointing to the map of the territory the Islamic State is trying to recover. First thing you do, you have to destabilize the region. And how do you destabilize the region? What does Sykes-Picot do? Sykes-Picot made all these new maps, and they drew new borders, and they never been drawn before. And they had never been drawn before. And these borders put people who were never together under one rule. The British, knowing that if they did that, it would take a strong man to keep them from fighting and killing each other. In other words, they were tribal. To get rid of Sykes-Picot Agreement, Beck said, you have to go after the dictators. Our president and all of us cheered when we got rid of the dictators of Egypt, Libya, and Iraq. Well, I didn't, because I knew what was going to happen. Now we're going after Syria. Next will be Jordan and Lebanon. And then finally, maybe Israel. Look at the map, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. They're doing nothing but remolding the map closer to their heart's desire and what they were promised 100 years ago. Now is their opportunity to achieve what they've always wanted from the very beginning, a return to a unified Arab kingdom. What a surprise, a caliphate, Islamic rule. There's no judgment on this one way or the other. This is just a fact. They want an end to the West and what the West created with Sykes-Picot. To get there, the best way to do that is to destabilize all these dictators and get them out of the way. You think this is a crazy theory? Here's ISIL in their own words on what's happening. Why are they doing this? Here's an ISIL guy. I don't know whether you're going to be able to understand this, but he talks about this Sykes-Picot European dividing up of the Arab lands. Let me see.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you can see right now, we're in the border of Iraq and Sham. Right now in the side of Sham, as you can see, this is the so-called border of Sykes-Picot. Alhamdulillah, we don't recognize it and we will never recognize it. Inshallah, this is not the first border we will break. Inshallah, we will break all the borders also, but we start with this, inshallah. So inshallah, if we walk, inshallah, we cross the border. And we see that, alhamdulillah, it used to be the Safavid army used to stand here. This is the so-called border where the police and the people used to pass. There's nobody now except the soldiers of Dawlat al-Islam. So alhamdulillah, inshallah, we crossed the border. Bismillah. This is the so-called checkpoint for the soldiers of Maliki Sistan. Alhamdulillah. And as you can see here, it's a sign. It says Commandos Battalion Border. The only commandos and battalion here is the Battalion of Islam, inshallah ta'ala. And as you can see, this is under our feet right now. That's how Abu Bakr Baghdadi used to say, he's the breaker of barriers. Inshallah, we'll break the barrier of Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, all the countries, inshallah, until we reach Quds, inshallah ta'ala. It's the first barriers of many barriers we will break, inshallah ta'ala. We're coming, inshallah ta'ala.
Well, there's a it's a longer video, but you can't see the video and you can't hardly understand the speaking, but he makes it clear there that what they're doing is breaking down all these borders and reforming the original United Arab ISIL setup, which was before the Ottoman Empire. And once the Ottoman Empire was broken up after the war, First World War, they were supposed to get it all back and form their caliphate. So it all becomes a lot more understandable now, and you begin to say, wait a minute, I tend to agree with ISIL on this, you know. I'm not making judgments on their activities and their methods. I'm just saying that this is something, you know, England, France, the United States, and have, you know, they've gone against all kinds of treaties in the past, and this is just one of them. And I'm not sure how much the United States was involved in this Sykes-Picot, mainly France and England, but this is a game they played, you know, always playing one against the other and then playing people in other countries. And so I tend to have an agreement with these people, so I guess that makes me an Arab terrorist. Now, they're playing this video all over the Middle East. Here they are, the Syrian border, showing how they've erased it and how Britain and France lied to the Arab world. See, these are the capitalists, not the people. The regular people of the Western countries don't do this. It's the goddamn capitalists, the ruling class. Beck's, let's see here, radical Islamists will use anyone, including the Jews and the Palestinians, to achieve their goals. And that is why there will never be a two-state solution. That's not the goal, never has been. Until the region is fully under Arab control, the fighting will never, ever, ever stop. There is no easy solution. I don't know how you turn the cycle of violence around, but the first thing you have to do is put the facts in place. You have to start with the truth. Now, it appears, you know, like, and I got to admit, Glenn Beck has done his homework on this. I'm not a big Glenn Beck fan, Glenn Becker. But I think he's done a lot of homework on this. Let's listen to his little talk on this here and see what we get.
But when we were at Fox, and I put up on the chalkboard and I said, hey, this is what's going to happen to the Middle East. But it didn't all fall into place until I learned about ISIS and ISIL and the difference between ISIS and ISIL. Now it all makes sense to me. And now you'll be able to figure out what is really going on and whether we should get involved and who we should be involved with. Let me give you the full context of what motivates the radical elements in the Middle East. It helps explain ISIL with much more clarity. Back to the beginning. Sykes-Picot. What did Sykes-Picot do? Bring up the map, please. Here's the map. Sykes-Picot was something where they said, hey, what we're going to do, Arab world, you just fight with us on World War II, or World War I. You just fight with us. And we're going to give you rule of the greater Syria. This is greater Syria. This is what they were promised. Remember, they were promised a united Arab rule. They wanted the caliphate back. They wanted the Ottoman Empire. So they said, hey, we'll give you all of this. Look at this map. But they lied. Now, the difference between ISIL and ISIS. Get to it here in a second. How do you get there? If you felt like you've been lied to. Well, first thing you do is you have to destabilize the region. And how do you destabilize the region? What did Sykes-Picot do? Sykes-Picot made all of these new maps, and they divided, drew new borders that had never been drawn before. And these borders put people who were never together under one rule. Knowing, the British knowing, that if they did that, it would take a strong man to keep them from fighting and killing each other. So they knew that dictators would rise up, and no one would ever agree. They'd be all so busy in those own little borders, keeping their own little thing happy, that the West could continue to do whatever it is the West needed to do. So the first thing you need to do, if you want this, you want this promise, is you have to destabilize. You have to go after the dictators. Our president and all of us have cheered when we got rid of the dictators in Egypt. Yay! A revolution totally isolated. Libya, yay! A revolution totally isolated. Iraq, yay! A revolution totally isolated. Now we're going after Syria. Yeah, let's get him totally isolated. Who's next? I'm telling you that ISIS, when we start giving the people of ISIL or ISIS, when we start saying we're going to fight them, and we're going to fight them with Muslim extremists who know all this history, they know what this is. When we say we're going to arm them, I'm telling you, this is the real target. Assad will fall. And next will be Jordan. Yay! And Lebanon. Yay! And then Israel. Look at the map. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. That's the difference between ISIL and ISIS. The L stands for Levant. It stands for this part all the way down to Egypt. They're doing nothing but remolding the map to closer to their heart's desire and what they were promised 100 years ago. Now is their opportunity to achieve what they've always wanted from the very beginning. A return to a unified Arab kingdom. What a surprise! A caliphate! Islamic rule. There's no judgment on this one way or another. This is just the fact. They want an end to the West and what the West created with Sykes-Picot. To get there, the best way to do it is to destabilize all these dictators, get them out of the way. So now there's chaos. Unite them behind this idea of getting rid of Sykes-Picot. And you use the Israelis and the Palestinians as pawns and scapegoats. You call these the bad guys, these the good guys, but you don't really care. Why? Because you want rule of greater Syria, and you want an end to Sykes-Picot. You think this is a crazy theory?
Glenn Beck's come up with another crazy theory. It's not true at all.
Really? This morning, as I was reviewing this, we've worked on this show now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. And as I was reviewing it, Dan, our head writer, came in and said, "You are not going to believe what I just found." I said, "What?" He said, "Glenn, ISIL just released a new video. Been out for a while. We just found it this morning. Here's ISIL in their own words on what's happening. Why are they doing this? Watch." This is why there will never be a two-state solution. That's not the goal. Never has been. Until the region is fully under Arab control, the fighting will never, ever, ever stop. There is no easy solution. I don't know how you turn the cycle of violence around. But the first thing they have to do is put facts in place. You have to start with the truth. Until tonight, I don't know anybody who's bothered to even investigate any of this. And this is not, I mean, we're not some grand investigator. I don't want to pump this up. We're just looking at history. Who's doing that? How are we expected to understand what ISIL is, what ISIS wants? How are we to expect them to, you know what we're going to do? We're going to wipe them out. We're going to tame them. We're going to reorganize. This is the president. We're going to organize the Middle East. Mr. President, may I suggest the organization is already happening. And you've cheered for that organization. Here's the real problem. I don't agree with the guy we had in Egypt or Libya or Syria or Iraq. We've made friends with all of these guys. Why? Because we violated our principles. England violated their principles. They didn't behave with honor in the first place. We haven't behaved with honor. If we behaved with honor, we would never have supported somebody with secret prisons. But here's why they say, well, you can't upset the apple cart. Because all those people at the State Department, which you hopefully found out about on For the Record last night, all those people at the State Department, they know about this. That's why they say you can't get rid of these people, because they know exactly what will happen. And it's happening. Now the question is, why are we there? What are we going to do about it? What is our responsibility? Our responsibility is to first tell the truth. Because you know what? You know who's a pawn? It's Israelis, the Palestinians, and the American people. The Canadian citizen, the British citizen, the French citizen, all the citizens of the world that have shed their blood and their
Well, there you go. All those people out there.
All of the peace accords.
Wait a minute.
And ceasefires and
Wait
the nonviolent
a minute.
Pledges.
Wait a minute.
None of.
Now, all the parents out there, these young men that went over there and got blown to pieces, killed, mauled, IED'd, and now are getting pretty much poor treatment back here in the States. Now you know what they died for. The grand plan. The grand plan. Oh, man. I don't think you can have patriotism to any central state anymore. I don't think any central state is worthy of your patriotism. That's why I don't stand when they play all this patriotic music anymore and when they raise the flag, because there's no honor among these governments. It was first historically the French and the English and some others, but then the United States got into the act and we made it even worse. They commit crimes against everybody. That's why the white race, the white working class section of the white race, have no future being patriotic to this Washington monster, this Pentagon. Because they don't care about you. If they destroy all these leaders of these other countries that they set up, do you think they care about you? They care about even the so-called United States? It's not united. No, it's trying to break it back up. Break it back up. Based upon this information, I'm certainly not an advocate of hammering ISIL. As long as ISIL's over there doing their thing and creating their caliphate, it's none of my business. That's their business. If they came over here, which they're not going to, that's a different story. So anyhow, you got it now. So whenever you hear these parents that are saying, oh, my son's going over there to save these people and free up these countries and all that, just tell them bullshit. You're just going to be a pawn in the game. War is a racket, as General Smedley Butler said. War is a racket. How do you like the latest news that some of the people in the European government, the Euro, want to start their own army over there? Well, it might be used more judiciously than the U.S. Army. Hate to see another bunch of armies form, but on the other hand, with the Euro army, they could tell the United States to take their troops home, take them out of Germany, take them out of France, take them out of these Western European countries, which it's an insult to me and to help a lot of other people. The U.S. troops are in Germany this long after World War II. It's ridiculous. German nationalists should have thrown them out a long time ago. And they will, but it's interesting in wanting a European army, or talking about a European army, and guess who's going to end up running, or being the most powerful unit in it? Will it be the Germans again? So that's what Hitler was looking for, to get all these countries of Europe together, the Aryan people, that Germany would be the leader. So guess what? Hitler's gone, but that idea is coming around again. Because you can have the Euro state, but if the Euro state has no military, it has technically no power, because the United States, or even an independent country with a lot of armaments and money, could tromp anything under its feet if it wants to. But if the Euro state has a military, that's a different story. Maybe we could do away with NATO, get that goddamn NATO out of the way. Well, here's a blurb from the Israeli press. I very much doubt whether anyone in Israel paid close attention to this past Sunday's national parliamentary elections in Estonia, but I was anxiously awaiting the results to see how the EKRE, the Conservative People's Party, would fare. A week previously, I had personally seen the party in action in Tallinn, Estonia's capital, the largest city, where, as part of their election campaign, they staged a torchlight parade to celebrate Estonian Independence Day. The march was sponsored under the slogan of Estonia for Estonians, a very clear and exclusionary message for the country's minorities, many of whom have been residing there for generations. Well, it's like we're going to go back to tribalism all over the world. That's great. I went to protest, and of course you got to stop these wars in the Middle East and all over the place so people can go home and rebuild. I went to protest and monitor the march as part of a project to document and assess four neo-Nazi ultranationalist marches. See, they try to change your attitude or handle your attitude right away by calling anything that is nationalistic neo-Nazi. These marches are taking in a span of less than 30 days in the capitals of the Baltic countries. Of Lithuania, two marches, one in pre-war capital of Kaunas, Kovno, and another one in the current capital of Vilnius, Vilna, Latvia, and Estonia. Let me check something here first. I guess that's okay. Wait a minute. The marches in the first two countries have been staged regularly for quite a few years, but the march in Estonia was being held only for the second time. The number of marchers has been on the rise throughout the region, and the major themes are the lack of tolerance for minorities, color them non-white, mostly, and possibly Jews, and the glorification of wartime local Nazi collaborators. Well, they were opposed to the Soviet Union. What do you expect? The latter theme is part of a systematic effort by most of post-communist Eastern Europe, led by the Baltic countries, and especially Lithuania. These are the whitest countries in Europe, Tommy says, to rewrite an accepted narrative of World War II and the Holocaust, by promoting the canard of equivalency between communist and Nazi crimes. Well, I think there was. The motive in this case is to hide, or at least minimize, the significance of war crimes committed by local Nazi collaborators and emphasize the suffering of these nations under communist rule. Well, they did. At the march, the main banner bore the inscription, "For Estonia." Oh, that's terrible. But the message was clearly directed against the country's minorities, who these Jews don't describe who they are, who are perceived as a threat. which is hardly surprising since some of the leaders of the EKRE are known for their lack of tolerance. Tolerance can be suicide, you know. Thus, for example, prominent party member Martin Helmy, not that long ago, summarized his attitude towards the possibility of African immigrants coming to Estonia as, "If you're black, go back." Well, he's an honest man. Yep. Yeah, you like to bring, those Jews, a lot of them are in control of things. They like to bring these blacks in there and muddy up the water in these countries, especially they're so white, some of the most beautiful women in Europe in those countries. As far as historical issues, they were noticeably absent, even though the EKRE reportedly is the party of choice of many Estonian SS veterans, since the latter meet every summer in Cinema, where they host their fellow Waffen SS veterans from various Western European countries, where such gatherings are prohibited by law. It's possible that the preference was to focus on the more pressing issue of national identity. Well, you know, these guys, what they're representing is the bravery of these soldiers that fought in World War II. It's not talking about Hitler. They're coming together in camaraderie that they fought the hard fight, and many of them didn't even want to do it, but they did it. They died by the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. So for the Jews to say, oh, that's horrible for these veterans to come together and celebrate their valor and so forth, is tell the Jews to go pump sand in a rat hole. Another possible explanation might be that the Holocaust does not concern most Estonians. Well, they're tired of it. Everybody in the world's been getting tired of being beat to death with your goddamn Holocaust. Since the scale of the tragedy was ostensibly very minor, with only 1,000 Jews being caught by the Nazi occupation in July 41. The fact of the matter is, however, that almost every single one of these Jews, you know, 55 million people died in World War II. 55 million. And only a small percentage of those were Jews. In many cases by Estonian Nazi collaborators. In addition, what would you have done? I mean, what would you have done if you lived back then? Which way would you have gone? Well, I think that the logic would have been go with the Nazis and the Germans, you know? I don't think it would have been logical to go with the Soviets. This is not to take away from the racial component, white racial component of Russia, but they had bad leadership too. The fact of the matter is, however, this Jew says that almost every single one of those Jews was murdered, in many cases by Estonian Nazi collaborators. Well, if they did that, that was wrong, unless they were Jewish communists and were fighting against them. In addition, tens of thousands of Jews from other countries were deported to Estonia to be worked to death in some of the 20 concentration camps staffed by Estonians and the 36th Estonian Security Police Battalion participating in the mass murder of thousands of Jews of Nurugudok. Well, since they should not have been sent down to Israel because that was not their land, and these European Jews, they weren't Hebrews. They should have done what they had talked about, establishing a country for them in Africa, farther down, I think in, I forget which country it was. I don't think it was Liberia, but some other country, not Madagascar, the island, because, however, there's disagreement on whether they could have survived there. The Germans seem to say that there wasn't enough there for them to survive. Well, if they wanted them all dead, why would they care? That's another question about the Holocaust, you know. The Germans checked it out. I've seen all the plans and so forth of Madagascar to ship the Jews down there, and the Jews came up with the idea that, well, it wouldn't be suitable because they couldn't really subsist down there. Well, if they wanted to kill them all, why did they give a shit, you know? It's just another lie. Okay. While planning my trip, this is the Jew talking, I consulted with an Israeli friend living in Tallinn for many years who suggested I postpone my visit until after the elections on March 1st, lest my presence at the march be considered provocation, which would help the ultra-nationalists. What the hell is an ultra-nationalist at the polls? In other words, you're supposed to be ultra-nationalist in the United States. You know, that's what they promote, United States exceptionalism. But for anybody else to do it, it's wrong. I explained that obviously I could not accept this suggestion since it was important to personally attend the march, which was planned to celebrate Estonian Independence Day on February the 24th. As it turned out, the march took place without any unpleasant incidents. Oh, you were disappointed, Jaime. With only about 200 people participating. Oh my God, run for the hills, 200 people at a parade. Although the Estonian press did not note my presence in negative terms. The electoral results indicated, however, that there are far too many Estonians willing to support the ultra-nationalist EKRE, which received 46,763 votes and 7 seats out of 101. Oh, run for the hills. In the Riigikogu, the Estonian parliament, they will almost certainly not be a part of the new government coalition, but their initial success should ring a loud alarm bell. We can't have this Estonia for Estonians. My God. Not only in Tallinn, but also in Brussels. Now, here's the author. The author is the chief Nazi hunter of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the director of its Israeli office and East European affairs. His most recent book is Operation Last Chance. So anyhow, there you go. Always agitating. That's why we got to be always agitating too. You know, we got to agitate. We're not agitating enough. The Negroes are out there agitating. The African Americans are agitating. The mulattoes are agitating. The niggers are agitating. So why aren't we agitating? Well, because we're fat and lazy, the whole country. And it's not going to be anything done until it turns to another form of objection, if you read my lips. But the way it looks, that's a ways off. However, things can change fast. If the prediction of Tom Harmon or some of these people come true, that a crash will occur in 2016, which is the presidential campaign, it could all come down real fast. And then this whole thing over in the Middle East, I think you're going to see some really interesting things happening over there. Especially now that this information is out that has been a part of history books for a long time that nobody read. And that gives you more understanding of Lawrence of Arabia. He went down there as a cat's paw, an agent for the British ruling class to set up this deception and steal the land from the Arabs. But then he found out when he got there what they were really doing. What they were really doing to take it over and split it up and put dictatorships in. And he ended up fighting on the side of the Arabs. That's another answer. A whole lot of Europeans and even Americans fighting for ISIL. Well, I don't know if they're related to the Arabs in those areas. A lot of them are just plain people, white people, black people, and so forth, which I think is a little ill-advised, but if they understand this situation with ISIL and the crap that went on in the past, it's probably a purer cause than fighting for the U.S. military occupation of these countries. Well, anyhow, that's it for Moon's Day. As you can see, things aren't always as they seem, and usually things are never as they seem. So that's why it doesn't pay you to go running out and pulling your AKs out of the ground yet. Because you may end up fighting for the wrong side or for the wrong reasons. And that's what most American soldiers are doing now. They're being totally manipulated and used as puppets in a big, big strategical game that's going on. And like I said before, Israel will gradually collapse with the strength and the growth of the Arabs sooner or later. They got to go because the United States and these other countries are going to run out of money to give them. You know, we've given Israel $750 billion since 1948, and we just gave them another $1 billion worth of arms and so forth. But that's going to end because of the economy's collapse in the Western world. Israel is going to be sitting there like a duck sucking on their thumb. 14-5. I'll see you tomorrow on Tuesday.
You have a steadiness about you, and I believe in you, but it comes soon, and you must be smarter than your enemy. What are you trying to say? The Americans, they're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body is cold. You do it a million times. And they never get it because the real solution always eludes them. That is? Do nothing. Shut down a fundamentally flawed system. All you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
And if you want to watch on television about as close of a dramatization of the way this government is run, watch The House of Cards, the series House of Cards. And I hope people understand that is so very close to how things are run in this country. It's unbelievable. Amazing.